lot. We've read a lot of stories.
Yeah,
You're like, no, that's exactly like the other Mars story that we read where he actually dies. Oh, right. Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
hello.
Okay, it's my turn and I picked a story called We Can Remember It For You Wholesale by Philip K. Dick. A moment later, the cab stopped at the curb before a modern, very attractive little pink building over which a shifting polychromatic neon sign read Recall Incorporated. The receptionist, chic and bare from the waist up, started in surprise, then gained masterful control of herself. "Oh, hello, Mr. Quayle," she said nervously. How are you? Did you forget something?" "The rest of my fee back," he said. More composed now, the receptionist said, "Fee, I think you are mistaken, Mr. Quayle. You were here discussing the feasibility of an extra factual trip for you," but she shrugged her smooth, pale shoulders. "As I understand it, no trip was taken." Quayle said, "I remember everything, miss. My letter to Recall Incorporated, which started this whole business off. I remember my arrival here and my visit with Mr. McLean, then the two lab technicians taking me in tow and administering a drug to put me out. No wonder the firm had returned half its fee. The false memory of his trip to Mars hadn't taken, at least not entirely, not as he had been assured." "Mr. Quayle," the girl said, "although you are a minor clerk, you are a good-looking man, and it spoils your features to become angry. If it would make you feel any better, I might, let you take me out." He felt furious then. "I remember you," he said savagely. "For instance, the fact that your breasts are sprayed blue, that's stuck in my mind. And I remember Mr. McLean's promise that if I ever remembered my visit to Recall Incorporated, I'd receive my money back in full. Where is Mr. McLean?" After a delay, probably as long as they could manage, he found himself once more seated facing the imposing walnut desk exactly as he had been an hour or so earlier in the day. "Some technique you have," Quayle said sardonically. His disappointment and resentment was enormous by now. "My so-called memory of a trip to Mars as an undercover agent for Interplan is hazy and vague and shot full of contradictions, and I clearly remember my dealings here with you people. I ought to take this to the Better Business Bureau." He was burning angry at this point. His sense of being cheated had overwhelmed him, had destroyed his customary aversion to participating in a public squabble. Looking morose as well as cautious, McLean said, "We capitulate, Quayle. We'll refund the balance of your fee. I fully concede the fact that we did absolutely nothing for you." His tone was resigned. Quayle said accusingly, "You didn't even provide me with the various artifacts that you claimed would prove to me I had been on Mars. All that song and dance you went into, it hasn't materialized into a damn thing, not even a ticket stub, nor postcards, nor passport, nor proof of immunization shots, nor—" "Listen, Quayle," McLean said, "suppose I told you—" He broke off. "Let it go." He pressed a button on his intercom. "Shirley, will you disburse 570 more creds in the form of a cashier's check made out to Douglas Quayle? Thank you." He released the button, then glared at Quayle. Presently, the check appeared. The receptionist placed it before McLean and once more vanished out of sight, leaving the two men alone, still facing each other across the surface of the massive walnut desk. "Let me give you a word of advice," McLean said as he signed the check and passed it over. "Don't discuss your, recent trip to Mars with anyone." "What trip?" "Well, that's the thing," doggedly, McLean said. "The trip you partially remember. Act as if you don't remember. Pretend it never took place. Don't ask me why. Just take my advice. It'll be better for all of us." He'd begun to perspire freely. "Now, Mr. Quayle, I have other business, other clients to see." He rose, showed Quayle the door. Quayle said as he opened the door, "A firm that turns out such bad work shouldn't have any clients at all." He shut the door behind him. I forget how I found this, but I remember I had wanted to read it in the past. I've read the title a million times and just could never find a PDF.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that was what the holdup was, because I can't remember. Is this part of like a collection?
It might be. I don't know.
I think that might be the problem, is that
He
it was
wrote
like,
billions of stories and just they
yeah.
kept getting published because he was just writing all the time in the 50s and 60s.
So whatever I had come across this title before, but this is the first time that I like found it standalone or whatever was the problem, and I was excited about it. Yeah, so you know a little bit more about the writer Philip K. Dick, but like you said, popular in like did you say 40s and 50s or 50s and
I mean,
60s?
he was writing a ton in the, I think, 50s and 60s. And obviously, he's had a huge impact on science fiction after, like, people name him as like, their favorite science fiction influence or whatever. I mean, I hadn't read this story before. I somehow never got around to reading it, but I read his novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? That Blade Runner was based based on.
Oh my God.
So a lot of his stuff turned into movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This short story was written in 1966. And I guess in total, he wrote 44 novels and 121 short stories.
He was pumping it out. He was a full-time writer back in those days when you sell things for like a couple of pennies and manage to scrape a living out of it. You have to write a
Yeah.
lot.
I don't know that I've written 121 short stories.
I have not.
I'm sure I've written like at least like 50, and none of them are published. So like when they're saying like he wrote 121 short stories, I guarantee you he wrote like 5,000, and
Yeah, that's
really,
probably true.
really 121 were published. So yeah, like I said, I hadn't read it. I didn't know what I was in store for. I'm sure at one point I realized it was science fiction, but when I finally found this PDF, I was like, what am I getting into? And so my first impression of it, probably until the section that I read, was that this guy felt a lot like our friend Walter Mitty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I love this first paragraph. This is the first paragraph of the story itself. It said, he awoke and wanted Mars. The valleys, he thought, what would it be like to trudge among them? Great and greater yet. The dream grew as he became fully conscious, the dream and the yearning. He could almost feel the enveloping presence of the other world, which only government agents and high officials had seen. A clerk like himself? Not likely. And I wrote right then, like, this is Walter Mitty, because what we remember from that story, at least what I do, is just like, this was like an adult man with the imagination of a child. And I guess at some age that becomes less cute, you know? But in this story, it took me a while, but I realized that, like, in whatever time and place the story takes place, people are actively visiting Mars. It's not that we're sending rovers or something. So that was interesting too.
This is such an interesting thing as far as like science fiction goes, because it's a forecasted future, but it's from the 60s. He wrote this in the 60s. So looking into the future, he's imagining that Mars has its own life, right? And he's bringing back these worms and stuff from it. People are living on different planets, visiting them. All kinds of things are alluded to that have happened. And like the technology, just his daily technology he's interacting with, he's taking, I forget what they call the little cabs that he drives around in.
Yeah.
But I realized halfway through reading this that I was kind of mentally inserting that they all had cell phones.
Yeah, there's like at some level you're like assuming they have to have this other thing they don't know about.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I was like, wait, they don't. Like I think it was around right before he pulled out the electronic yellow pages, which is, we don't think of the yellow pages at all anymore. You just have access to the internet on your phone, which is kind of stands in for that. A lot of postings by businesses that have phone numbers next to them. But it was just interesting that like he didn't specifically mention anything that I could point to as being like, oh, that's his imagining of what has become cell phones. But I was just inserting that into the world because I live with them.
Yeah, so like you said, it's like this is like forecasted into the future. They are visiting Mars. And so that's not the part that's science fiction in this story. It's not like
Oh, yeah. That's just the setting. That's just what it is.
that's taken for granted. And then like what we realize is that like this guy, he wants to visit Mars. He's never going to be able to. It's just like me wanting to go to the moon now. It's feasible for some people, but it won't be me. And if I
Yeah.
really, really, really wanted to go, then the next best thing in this reality is to do what it sounds like a lot of people do, which is like implant a false memory. That's also something people are actively doing. And like,
There's a company.
yeah, it's a full company and it's
They
like
advertise.
Men in Black, where afterwards you don't know that you had it implanted. So it's like legitimate that way. It feels almost like that other story that you shared, the about the orphans.
Oh, yes. Sour Milk Girls.
Sour Milk Girls. Yeah. Okay. So there's some element of that there where it's like they lose their memory and they gotta like come up with better ones so that they, yeah, they implant them on like a USB drive.
Yeah, there's a lot of science fiction that deals with memory stuff, mind writing and stuff.
Yeah, so that's what you think the sci-fi story is going to be. You're like, oh, well, he's just going to get this memory. And then when he goes home, like his pain in the ass wife, who's the same wife from Walter Mitty, she's like, keep your fucking feet on the ground, dude, and just like do what you need to do. She's like villainized, but like imagine living with a man that every day wakes up and yearns for Mars. Like, oh my God, you know the dishes are not getting done.
But he's a paid assassin, right? Who has to be tended to make sure he doesn't remember what he did. And I assume that she's been planted to do that.
Yeah, maybe. She might be like fully privy to the real story here.
Or part of it, like at least enough to do her mission, right? It's like
Yeah.
tend to this guy. And it's like, ah, oh, that means I have to live with him and pretend that I love him.
But that's what becomes the real story. This is like a story within a story within a story. You think it's like Mars that you can
Yeah.
never get there and it'll be a story about how you get there. No, it's not that. You think about it's about implanting a memory so that you believe it. No, it's not that. You think it's about like this going wrong somehow. No, it's not about that. It's that he actually had his memory wiped because he was a trained assassin for the government. He's been to Mars. He's not supposed to remember it at all. Now he does. And as soon as he starts remembering it too much, the government comes and they're like, like, hey, buddy, shut up.
I heard this thing about Philip K. Dick a long time ago, which was that apparently he's kind of like theory of storytelling or something. I don't know if it's highfalutin enough to call it that, but whatever. His approach to storytelling was that, I forget what the exact count was, but every like 10 pages or every like certain space of a manuscript,
It would twist.
he felt like he had to start a new, like it had to become a different story. Like it wasn't necessarily a twist. It wasn't always twisting, like what we think of like M. Night Shyamalan kind of stuff, where
Yeah,
everything's built
sure.
around a single
Like
twist. But
a
it was like
reveal.
something happens to make it a different story. And I remember reading Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, and it felt that way. Like the movie Blade Runner doesn't take that on. Like the book and the movie are so different. And even Total Recall, which is based on this story, doesn't do that in the same way that this one does. There are reveals and there are twists in that, but it's
Right.
not like it's a new story each time. Whereas this one, it's kind of just like especially the Android story novel, every few pages, it just like something happened to make it a different story. Like all of a sudden
Right.
he's being chased, and then the next thing it's a
Yeah.
mystery, and then the next thing is something else. And like it's like a roller coaster in that way.
Yeah. And I wonder if that was his approach to storytelling, if it was something that he knew he set out to like make the story one thing and like reverse engineered it or something.
Like, did he plan ahead, or did he just kind of like,
Yeah. Or if he was having fun thinking to himself, like, well, what if actually now this happens?
I mean, it might be just that he was like, as he wrote, he'd get bored of what he was writing. He's like, okay, I gotta
Yeah.
spice it up and change things. So he'd like make something happen to change it. And then now it's more exciting to keep writing.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about it either way, right, is the idea that whether he knew it or planned it, his approach, part of that is committing to the bit until you shift it, right? He's not
Yeah.
even like hinting. I don't think. When I'm reading this, I wasn't thinking to myself like that this was going to be a story about,
Like a series of reveals.
yeah, him actually having gone to Mars for something wildly different, and like that maybe his like yearning to go there was the result of having this like repressed or wiped memory. Like that was not on my radar. I wasn't reading for that.
You've seen the movie Total Recall, right?
I haven't, no.
You haven't? Okay.
No.
I mean, I guess you were probably young when that came out.
Wait, it came out in 1990. I
I don't know.
think that's what it said. I was two.
So when I read it, I knew that as a background. They
Yeah.
turned this story into that movie. So I kept thinking about that movie. I couldn't help it, especially because like that is the setup of the movie. He wants to have memories implanted. And then the exact
Right.
same thing happens. Like, no, actually you're a super spy or something. But they take it in a different direction in the movie.
Right. It's cool that, like, because he's committed to the shifts or whatever, the redirections, that they are these truly surprising things. And I wouldn't suggest that people do that because, like, we know how you and I talk about all the time, like, endings need to be, like, surprising but inevitable. Like, nobody likes a twist ending. Nobody likes when you're reading, 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 there's no hint of anything. And then suddenly the ending is this, like, thing out of left field that doesn't feel like anything you could have anticipated or anything the character really
People don't like
wanted.
surprise endings.
No.
They want the twist to feel inevitable. Like, oh, I should have seen that coming.
Like, you know, I think we talked about this too. I don't know which story, but like a way to do it would be like a character has for years been wanting to visit Mars, but the twist is they visit Venus and that's better. You know what I mean? Like, it
Yeah.
can't be like so, like, nobody likes that and then they woke up from a dream. It has to be like that they wanted something and then what they get is different, but we ultimately knew that they had to travel or whatever it was. Or they get to Mars, but they can't come back, whatever it is. Well, I did enjoy that part of this.
The shifts.
Yeah, I don't think in general and outside of sci-fi, I would want to read stories that do this repeatedly because it's just not what I'm into. I'm into stories where it's more about character
Oh, that was going to
than.
inform my takeaway.
Yeah. Oh no. I'm not super into it. That's the takeaway.
Uh-oh. I mean, it was going to inform my takeaway about kind of like freshening things up every few pages. Like, you don't have to literally change the story, or, and I wouldn't give the advice where you have a twist every 5 pages. It needs to develop naturally from what came before, but like having things that just like kind of build and build and build, that was going to be my takeaway. So it's not exactly that.
No, and I'm into that because I forget who talks about it, but like when you have your protagonist, your hero, and they want something, it wouldn't be a story if they got it easily or right away. And so what you do is like throw complications at them, right?
Yeah, basic storytelling
Yes, basic
there, right?
storytelling, but in the sense that like you're consistently throwing hurdles at them, like
Yeah.
bigger and bigger and like more dramatic and maybe not things that are actually happening in real life. Like I'm totally for that. If the focus of the story is that character, here it's like you're struggling to keep up with the plot a little bit. You're like, whoa, 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 wait a second. He did find these worms in
It's
his
true.
desk drawer. Like, what does that mean? I mean, I enjoyed this story. My point is just like, yeah, that's not the general advice, and it wouldn't necessarily work for all types of stories to be like, actually.
Yeah, the Philip K. Dick method of redefining the story every few pages.
Yeah, because it sounds like maybe for him, like what he's into with that method is like this feeling of not understanding what reality really is in sci-fi. Or like that you said earlier, like he was paranoid in real life and had mental illness. Like the idea that like you can tell yourself that the government's after you and they know more than you do and they send people to go do things, but they actually feel differently about it, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the part that like twists again. So like he was like a trained assassin, whatever, he had to go, and then he like kind of like finds out that that was like that actually happened, and he's like, wait, please don't kill me. If this memory shit really works, like give me a new one. And they're like, okay, well it's got to be like pretty specific, because otherwise you're just gonna want to go to Mars forever and this will never end. Like you have this like innate desire to do that, and we're gonna be living at Recall Incorporated unless you get your shit together. He's like, I got an idea. He's like, implant a memory where if I die or if I go back to Mars or whatever it is, that like everybody explodes and dies, and I am like this single person like holding humanity together, and it's because I like met with these little like aliens
Yeah.
and I was nice to them. And they're like,
All right,
okay.
let's do it. Let's do
They're like, that's very specific and cutesy. And like when I read it, I was like, this is so cute.
it. Seems like, oh, that's an interesting solution.
Yeah, it is so cute. I'm gonna see if I
Because
can
he wants to
find.
feel important. He wants to feel.
Yeah, which is like the Walter Mitty effect, right? Like,
Yes.
there's nothing about this daily life that makes you feel important and that there's something exciting going on, or and a good solution to all of that is to ha is for something to be like covert, where only you know that this is your mission, and everybody maybe thinks that you're masquerading as a proper adult man, but what they don't know is that you actually have all of these skills and all of these things that you're working on. Okay, it says this is when they've decided to like put him under or whatever, and they're gonna do it, and so the guy's like talking to him. Yeah, it's a psychiatrist. Okay, it says your fantasy is this: you are 9 years old, walking alone down a rustic lane. An unfamiliar variety of space vessel from another star system lands directly in front of you. No one on Earth but you, Mr. Coyle, sees it. The creatures within are very small and helpless, somewhat on the order of field mice, although they are attempting to evade Earth. Tens of thousands of other ships will soon be on their way when this advance party gives the go-ahead signal. And I suppose I stop them, Coyle said, experiencing a mixture of amusement and disgust. Single-handed, I wipe them out? Probably by stepping on them with my foot? No, the psychiatrist said patiently. You halt the invasion, but not by destroying them. Instead, you show them kindness and mercy. Even though, by telepathy, their mode of communication, you know why they have come. They have never seen such humane traits exhibited by any sentient organism, and to show their appreciation, they make a covenant with you. This is so cute. And then Quail said, so they won't invade Earth as long as I'm alive? Exactly. And so it gives him like this thing, but then, yeah, and then even McLean says, it's touching. They're kind of like, they're like standing back and like looking at this guy on the table, like, all right, fine. But then he gets home. Hold on.
It's when they try to do the implant. They realize, oh no, something's going wrong again. The intercom buzzed. Mr. McLean, I'm sorry to bother you.
Yeah. Is the conclusion not that this is the actual memory?
Yeah, then when they're trying to implant it, the exact same thing happened as they tried to do with the Mars thing was
Yeah.
they discovered that he already had this actually happened to him. He is that person.
And he
Except
remembers
it's a
it
little
because
different because instead of
the
getting the healing
artifact,
ray,
yeah.
he gets the destruction ray and he used
Yeah,
that
yeah.
as a.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like the artifact that they promised to send him home with, he already has like a different version of it, and he's like kind of like remembering, like, wait a second.
Well, he doesn't like as they're doing the procedure, they're
Yeah.
discovering that he does have that.
So that's so cute. It's so cute. This really happened to him.
This is the when we're talking about having the story change every few pages, it's like none of that is a fundamental change. It's all based on his initial, the first page when he's like, I have this just desire to do something exciting, to be exciting.
Yeah.
And everything that follows from that is just like trying to figure out a way to have an exciting life. And part of that is like they want to kill him, so I want to stay alive. Part of that is I want it, but now that they've caught me again, I've surrendered. How do I go back to a boring life, but kind of keep some excitement into it? And so
Right.
that's where the this new alien invasion memory is coming from. And then by the end, like, no, really, you do have exciting life at the end.
Yeah, this is your actual life.
Yeah. So he's not fundamentally changing like what's happening to the character. It's a progression. It's like it's all building on stuff that came before. Like even the silly thing, like the prop of him having the artifact that he could use. This is the thing
Yes.
that turned out he used when he did the assassination before.
Right.
I think like if it was a workshop or something, I'd be like, well, you should probably like hint at that earlier, like have something so it feels more resonant when it happens. Not not just like it feels like you got to the end, decided that that artifact was used in the
Right.
assassination, but never went back to the previous pages to kind of like make that part of this earlier story.
Right.
But you don't necessarily need that.
No. And like you said, like these are not like they're shifts or whatever, but like the way I'm like picturing these twists, it's more like maybe we're turning like blind corners, you know? Like this is the inevitable path of the story, but we just haven't to this point in the story been able to see the next part. Like there's been no hint of
It's a
it.
surprise.
Yeah, it's a surprise, but it's not, we're not like in a different car or on a different road. This is just a curve.
And he doesn't do the literal different story thing where all of a sudden we're following somebody else. Like, oh, who's this
No, yeah,
character?
right.
It's the
Yeah,
same
this.
character that he's trying to maintain like a psychic continuity to who he is.
Yeah, I don't know if I was just on my game when I read this, but normally this is the kind of story I feel like I would have to read like 3 times before I fully appreciated like each of those shifts. And I guess it's just that the writing was good enough, or that, I don't know. Like I said, usually this is one that would trip me up, but when I read this like the first way through, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm following each of these steps. And I think that that's hard to pull off, especially when it's a story inevitably dealing with memory. Like we're not just talking about twists, we're like trying to keep track of what is real for the character, what is real for the rest of the people on the page, what's real for me, the reader, what don't I see coming, what have other people known this whole time, who's discovering what and when, because it turns out the government has known all along that he did this thing, right? But the people at Recall are like, oh shit. It's like as they're doing their job, they're realizing what he doesn't know.
One of the cool things is that when he goes back to get that final procedure, then we're going to plant this alien invasion memory. What happens to discover that he already has that memory is like the exact parallel, exact mirror to what had happened before when they had tried to implant the Mars memory. Mr. McLean's sitting in his office. He gets called in by Lowe and says something's going wrong. And this time he's like, he froze as he recognized it, froze and became mute. Something's come up. Maybe better if you came in here. McLean sprinted for the work area because he recognized it. We recognize it too, but the character is also recognizing it. So like having
Right.
that kind of like repeat, you can see the same moment in different ways and like you recognize it and like you know the implications of it.
Yeah, I underlined the line on the first page where it says Kirsten reminded him of this at least once a day, and he did not blame her. It was a wife's job to bring her husband down to earth.
Down to earth.
Yeah, I hate that. I resent that.
1960s.
Yeah, he's like, it's a wife's job to be a buzzkill. But to your point, maybe that's a reference to her point in the story, right? Where like she's the one sort of keeping him safe, like keeping this memory in check for his own good.
Yeah,
We don't know that for sure, but yeah.
I don't know if I got that from the movie or something.
Yeah. I mean, but it's interesting because the government at least would know that it's key to have a wife in this scenario who is going to remind him that's not true, whether or not she has whatever memory implanted herself. And like we're talking about, like, this is a character, Douglas Quayle, who doesn't change from beginning to end. He has this like urge to do something great, and it's almost just inevitable that he would thwart his wife at every turn, right? It doesn't matter that she exists and she's telling him this. That's part of his like inclination. That's part of the joy for him, is to be like, yeah, she doesn't know any better. She doesn't get it. You know what I mean? Imagine if everyone in his life was like, go to Mars, Doug. We'll crowdfund for you. You deserve, you know, that's not that it wouldn't be fun to go to Mars. He wants to go to Mars despite what everyone says. Like there's this part of him that's like, I'm greater and better, and my purpose is something you can't understand or appreciate, but it's innate to me and I have to. Like they might have done better to have a supportive wife.
That's interesting.
A supportive wife.
No, I'm just thinking of the way the story could go in different directions.
Yeah, I'm just speaking to the strength of like the character development here. Like this is a guy that wants, he enjoys the fact that other people don't get it, which is why by the end, this memory that actually happened, that it's like it's so core to him. It happened to him when he was 9 years old to have a secret and a purpose beyond what any adult or other person could understand. Like that, of course, will give you a complex. Trying to think what else. Your takeaway was going to be about like the turning, I guess. I guess we've kind of hammered that, but.
I mean, my takeaway, just having the story develop in new directions, I guess, maybe. And well, the pitfalls of that is you can screw it up. I was thinking of the movie, first Transformers movie, the Michael Bay original redo. Okay, so I used to watch that show in the 80s. And then when the animated movie came out in the 80s, I went and saw it in the theater. It's very excited and I enjoyed it. So when the new movies were coming out, I dragged my friend to go see it. I was like, oh, it's Transformers. Like, this is my thing I loved as a kid. And then it was a terrible movie. And I remember driving back after the movie, we're in the car, and he didn't say a thing because he knew how much I was, how excited I was for the Transformers. And he knew it was a terrible movie. So he's like, he didn't say anything. Until finally, my first comment was something about, it's like, did they have a different writer for every 6 pages of that script? Because that's what it felt like. It felt like there were sections and like, right. They didn't connect to each other. The only through line was like the characters had the same name, right? It was just like, it was a totally disjointed kind of like, it was a different movie. Like there's one section where one of the Transformers is tiptoeing around in a backyard. And then the next section is something completely different. It's like you're making a comedy over here and you're trying to do drama over here. It was bad.
Yeah.
But that's the danger. If you get a new writer every 6 pages, if you try to change the story every so often, it can come off like that. You don't try to maintain those through lines. Try to like keep the character development. Like the character needs to be consistent. Even if the character is developing and changing, there has to be a consistency to that development as it moves through these shifts. So I think that's the way that a story like this succeeds, is by having some grounding to it, having something underlying it that holds it together.
So my takeaway is one I'm coming up with on the spot, but
it's the best kind.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about this ending until we were like going over it. But like, I love just this idea that as a 9-year-old, he had this mission and it was with these little field mice aliens. And it was like, he spared them and then they have a covenant and he's kind and cute and he's got a mission. And we were talking earlier about wondering with Philip K. Dick, you know, if this is his method to storytelling, how does he approach it? Does he reverse engineer it? Does he start from the beginning? Regardless, one way that you could mimic what it is you're talking about with like introducing shifts while maintaining like the core truth of the character would be to have a backstory like this one, whether it ever makes it onto the page, like knowing that as a 9-year-old, this is what he experienced and this is how it defined him, whether or not he's privy to it, right? Because this character, the premise is that he doesn't even remember this real memory, but it has informed his personality. And that you can think of a million things that happened in your own childhood that affected you in some way, like good or bad. This is arguably like sort of a good one where he views everything as a mission and it's important and it's secretive and it comes down to him and nobody can understand it, you know, and his wife's job is to ground him. And yet she doesn't understand that as long as I'm alive, she's safe type thing, like, or whatever, like whether or not he's aware of that in the beginning stages of this story, it's informed who he is as a person. So it doesn't really matter the same way, like, you know, that there's people with repressed memories, right? Or who don't remember like swaths of their childhood. It doesn't mean that you've erased their impact. You just can't maybe necessarily pinpoint where it came from, but it has informed so many things about you. So I guess one way to do that, if you're going to do the shifting, would be to just have this backstory. But regardless, you got to know your character. And one way to do that would be to come up with some cool thing that happened to them as a kid, whether or not it makes it on the page.
That's the key, I think, is, you know, there's Hemingway's iceberg thing, and you have all this, the character is this giant iceberg, but the whole character doesn't fit in the story. You get this stuff above the surface, and there's this whole underwater section that kind of informs what's floating up there. So as a writer, you should know your character. And that means like whatever method there is to do it, there's some writers that just like write pages and pages of like, they'll like create diary entries. They'll just like write a like kind of first person kind of like account of something that never makes it into the story or the novel or whatever it is, just so that they can kind of figure out who the character is, so that when they do start writing the story or the novel, they have a really firm grasp on who the character is. So whatever can help inform that. I like that idea of like coming up with little things from the childhood that like you keep in the back of your mind as you're writing. It's like, oh, this is kind of reminiscent of that, or this is why that character is reacting in this way. Then you know, and it'll help make it feel like it has that consistency because you know that.
Yeah. And I'm not a writer that does the kind of work required of some of that, you know, but I do feel like a lot of times I'm like writing about, I don't know, especially if it's like nonfiction and you're like basing it like on yourself or someone else, like, you know what makes you tick, whether or not it's like going to be on the page.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, your friends, it's asking the question, well, what would Joe do if this happened to him? And like, that's how you write a story. It's like you have your character and it's like, well, what would they do? And like, this friend would do that and that friend would do this, but my character That's one of the annoying things about feedback in the workshop when you hear somebody say, like, I don't know anyone who would do that. You're like, the character would do that.
Yeah,
This is
exactly.
what the character, that's what defines them, is they are the kind of person who would do that.
Yeah, whether or not it's believable is like, it's a little
That's more
different.
about consistency.
Yeah.
Like, if the character does this in act one, but does something different in act two, then.
Yeah, but it's not just on the writer whether or not like you've ever encountered it. That's like I wrote a story once, I think I've brought it up before, where I wrote about a cop that drank and drove, and someone in the workshop was like, "Oh my God." And I was like, "Yell at him, dude. I'm not drinking and driving."
Yeah. I'm sure that that has happened.
That's what I mean. I was like, "What do you mean?" All right. Well, thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.